They say that the best camera is the one you've already got in your hand. And when you're running as fast as boulder runner Todd Straka, you use every advantage to stay in the moment and the beauty of Colorado's Front Range as you capture it all through your cell phone's lens. Join Todd and I as we kick around Confluence Park in downtown Denver to talk about the upcoming Athlinks podcast launch, the Boulder Boulder, which Todd now calls home, and how he has managed some ridiculous times after 50. So if you're ready, crank it up and let's go. Hey everybody, it's Troy Bousseau coming to you from Confluence Park in downtown Denver. It's just a few days before Halloween and the year that will not be named. We are kicking off a new video series here on Athlinks where we're going to be sitting down talking to some of the millions of endurance athletes who would frankly normally be crossing finish lines this time of year but have been otherwise put up on the shelf. So today we are here with the Boulder runner, Todd Straka. And we're going to be just talking a little bit about how Todd got into the industry. You work in the industry with Boulder Boulder, amongst other companies in the past like Map My Fitness. You are a very fast guy after 50, so I know I was just looking at your Athlinks profile, saw 430 miles somewhere tucked in there, as well as just kind of how you've been staying fit and fast and healthy during the coronavirus days. So, Todd, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
To the show.
Yeah.
Cool.
Looking forward to it.
So you work for Boulder Boulder now, one of the most iconic races, frankly, in the world.
Yeah.
It's about a 60,000 person 10K. Is it Memorial or Labor Day?
Memorial Day.
Yeah. Through the mean streets of Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
How long have you worked for them?
I just started in January, actually.
Oh, perfect timing.
Yeah. It was great timing.
Perfect timing.
Although, I've been sort of working with them over the last few years, kind of in a unofficial capacity.
Yeah.
I've been on the floor the last couple years and updating live tweeting. Okay. And feeding data to Frank Shorter and his team as they're doing commentary online. Yeah. So I've kind of been part of this team, and I kind of joke with them. I've been like interning with them for like 10 years to get this job. So
yeah, a lot of those big races are such machines. It's like everybody in the town has one way, shape, or form some connection to the race.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, even though we've got 50,000 people that are running the race, there's so many volunteers that are there. You've got key volunteers that are, in important positions, and some of those, they've been doing it the whole time. You know, they've been doing it for the entire 40 years that we've been doing it. So
that's crazy. It's such a great race. I mean, it's from that whole weekend, you go down to Pearl Street and you see the whole vibe, shaping up. I mean, Pearl Street's always kind of a melee in that part of the year, and things are getting warm and stuff, and then you throw Boulder Boulder in there. It's just such a cool, epic race.
It's an amazing weekend. Like, it's always been, ever since I've moved to Boulder, it's been such a big part of my life. So
yeah.
Such a cool opportunity to be a part of it all now.
Yeah, so you mentioned January, you show up. Things still looked good until kind of going into March, but what has life been like working for one of the world's biggest races with coronavirus? What have you guys been doing to keep yourselves busy, or how have you guys adapted and worked with the
situation? Yeah, so I mean, our organization is actually pretty small. It's a family-run business, and they just have an amazing ability to basically scale up when they need to. So when I started in January, we were still about, I think, 7 or 8 people in the office.
Yeah.
And that grows obviously to hundreds of people by the time that we get into May. And so January was still pretty young. February, we're starting to get some senses of some things that were maybe coming from overseas.
Yeah.
And then by March, with a race that's our size, you really have to start thinking about things in advance, and you need time to plan that. So you can't just wait until April to run a May race. You kind of have to make some decisions. And in March, we decided that, maybe we should postpone this to Labor Day and see if we can run on Labor Day. And unfortunately, Labor Day came around and still weren't able to run. So
yeah, I remember that first 30 days, it seemed like a lot of races were like, well, let's just postpone for 30 or 60 days. It certainly seemed like it was just going to be kind of a quick little blip.
It was certainly hard to guess. I mean, everybody had opinions kind of one way or another. I don't think anybody expected it to kind of go this long.
Sure.
And if they were, nobody was really saying it. But I think, everybody in the event industry in particular, like, we're all very positive and we're all optimistic. And so, of course, like, that's what we want to do, is to put on races. And so that's going to be the first thing we want to do, as opposed to pushing it off and waiting for another year.
Yeah. So a race like Boulder Boulder, how much, from a marketing standpoint, how much of it is like crowd control, meaning that you're going to fill up every year, I would assume, versus like you're actively trying to, you know, get new business, new runners to the race?
You know, actually, we've never had to worry about selling out. We've kind of known that there's been some big capacities. Yeah. And then the bigger you are, the more crowd control, like you said, you have to have. And we have this WaveStar. They were one of the first ones to start the WaveStar in the industry. And they're really good about knowing how many people need to be in each wave and how fast you need to be in each wave and so forth. So you can manage that throughout the day. And obviously, we just don't have all day to be open. And so you still have to kind of compress that a little bit. And then unique to that is they run the pro race at the end of it. And so they need everybody off the streets at the end of that. So you kind of have to manage that crowd control too. So we've never really had to worry about selling out, so to speak. Yeah. It's kind of just always been like, hey, everybody, come to our big party and be a part of this thing. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes marketing plays a part of it. And sometimes it's just the nature of the town, you know, and whatever else is going on. You know, people move to town, they've never heard about it before, they heard about it from a friend, so they decide to join, or, you know, people are injured and they can't make it that year, and so, you know, it vacillates up and down just like any other event does.
Yeah, so for anybody who's been thinking about doing the Boulder, give like a 30-second pitch. I mean, I know it's like you're basically 6 miles, if you got bands, you've got things that have been manufactured in other races but are very kind of organic, and, you know, give us like a 30-second sales pitch of why I'd want to come to Boulder and do this race.
Yeah, I mean, besides being the third sort of largest race in the U.S., the reason why it's one of the best is mostly because of the wave, the wave assignments that they've got, and it's an honor to kind of make sure that you're in that wave. Like, the A wave is the top wave. It's the first one that goes off in the morning. So, you know, if you've got an A on your bib, like, you definitely have bragging rights for that year, right? And people are gunning for whichever wave they can qualify in. So you have that. And so even those 50,000 people, you're really only racing like maybe a couple hundred that are right around you. And what's cool about it is, because it is the largest race, especially in Colorado, is that you're always running with people. And that energy is, you're always feeding off of that energy, right? It's not like if you go out and do a marathon, or you go out and do another 10K and everybody's kind of spread out. Sometimes you're running on your own and you want to run fast, but you don't have anybody to really gauge that energy. Yeah. And then, you know, for folks like myself, even though there's that race aspect of it, there's also this family aspect and this party aspect. It's sort of like, I kind of joke about it being like a mullet. It's like there's a lot of business up front, and then there's a party all the way through the rest of it. And so, like you said, there's bands, there's people handing out bacon, there's pugs that you can kiss, there's slip and slides, there's trampolines, like, there's just all sorts of stuff going on. And so, you know, even myself, like, you'd run the race and then you'd go back and double up with your kids afterwards and run it again, and then see it all from a completely different angle, because now there's that many more people on the course, and it's just such a fun time. And it goes right through the streets of Boulder, and then you finish in the iconic Folsom Field at CU, and you run into the stadium where there's thousands of people that are cheering, and it's like the Olympics. It's unbelievable when you get in that stadium and the energy that's just inside that stadium.
Certainly helps you overcome the altitude, but it is one of these like just iconic races. When we moved up here 5-6 years ago, that was the kind of like, ooh, okay, you know, Boulder's coming up here. So that's cool. So you work for Boulder now. You've worked for a few different companies in the industry. I know MapMyFitness, who you actually used to be HQ'd right down the street here.
Right.
How long were you with them? What was your time there?
I think it was probably like 5 years or so.
Pre-Under Armour days?
Pre-Under Armour, right before Under Armour.
Yeah.
we chatted about, you know, reading the industry and reading the landscape a little bit, and I knew that was probably coming.
Yeah.
But I wasn't strong enough to sit in there long enough to figure out to see the windfall of that. That was pretty awesome.
It always happens.
What they did and what they built. So
Well, it was cool to be part of that. I mean, I think, you know, not to play favorites or anything. I mean, Strava, I think, has taken the lead in that space, obviously. But but with the MapMyFitness, you know, the first mover, what they did for the industry in terms of, you know, just kind of dreaming up a new way to train and exercise and things like that. Yeah. Was really fantastic.
I was in kind of like on some of those early days, and that was what was phenomenal about it. I mean, again, everything that I was super excited about. I had a website at the time, and it was all about running, and I even had a mapping platform on there, but yeah, I didn't have a way to save the runs there. And I'm like, this is the coolest thing. Yeah. And we were building the app when I first started as well. And here's to kind of be on the ground level of all that and just innovating and coming up with cool stuff and inspiring athletes all around to just get out there and be active.
Well, you, speaking of innovating, and you've certainly got an artistic side. I mean, if for those of you who are listening or watching is, Boulder Runner, at Boulder Runner on Instagram. I think that's how, like, I think I knew you from that before I met you, even at Running USA. Like, the photos, you had the Boulder Running Journal, which was a collection of these, like, 365 kind of photos, and each day you had this running log, which is a brilliant format. I love that. Like, every kind of iconic running city should have this product. I thought it was fantastic. But Boulder Runner, like, is all of that cell phone photography, or how often are those photos taken with like real glass?
Yeah, I mean, I'll even go back a little bit further. So like when Twitter first started, everybody was kind of trying to figure out what it was and what we're doing with it. And I was at another company before MapMyFitness that was doing financial information, and we were actually looking at Twitter as a way to aggregate sentiment on the market and so forth. And so we're kind of just all playing around with it. And so luckily I kind of came onto that moniker like early on. And I don't really like to be kind of out in front and, you know, in front of the camera, so to speak. And so hiding behind a Boulder Runner moniker seemed a little bit nicer for me. Yeah. Like, so that kind of translated into Instagram, obviously. And then, that was all cell phone photography at the time. Because as much as I like taking the time to kind of frame up a shot and so forth, it's about being in the moment. And I want to go out with my phone and run, and I want to see what I see and then go, oh, I love that shot. Like, I'm going to take a picture of it and remember that later on. Yeah. And so that's what it was all about for me. And I've very rarely posted a shot that's been like me taking out my nice Sony A7 and going out and shooting something and putting it up there. I've done that a little bit here and there because I just love the shot so much, but I try to keep it a little bit more pure of like, this is what I'm seeing when I'm running that day.
No, I can't believe it. You and I had like a photo duel before I moved up here, and you'd posted this like amazing meadow, these beautiful flowers, and I was living in Phoenix where I grew up, and I sent you a picture of like the cracked mud, like the sun cracked mud, of like the contrast of Boulder versus Phoenix running.
I loved that. I was telling everybody about that conversation all the time. I'm like, I'm punking Troy right now because I've got this, like, it was springtime, and I remember that run specifically. It was springtime, and we had done this Flagstaff run because I was working at Finish Line, and we were right downtown, and Chautauqua was a mile away. So we're like, let's go run Chautauqua and Flagstaff Mountain because it's right there.
Yeah.
So we were coming down, and you could see the Chautauqua meadow right below us, and it was all green, and we were having a phenomenal rain year that year. Yeah. I think was the other thing. Yeah. So there was wildflowers that were going off and all sorts of greenery, and everybody couldn't believe it. And I mean, this must have been, I don't know what, like 7 years ago or, time's a slippery slope right now, but one of those times. And you remember you posting that, and man, I just laughed about it. Like every time we would tag each other in a photo and this is my run. It was gravel and a couple little spindly cactus. Yeah. And
even the cactus were thirsty then. that was a stark contrast. So beyond the photography side of things is, I think, we met at Running USA. I was looking through your athlete's profile and stuff. You know, you meet people and you never know, like, who's... Endurance sports are weird like that. Like, sometimes you can kind of tell who's who and all that kind of stuff just physically, but you're what, 53 now?
I'm 53, yeah, I just 53 turned 53
now. Yeah. And you're still clocking out, what, a 4:30 mile, I think I saw?
Yeah, on a good day.
Ish, you know?
Yeah.
You ran Publix. Actually, let's talk about Publix real quick. So you had the luck, I guess, the honor of really running the last big race in the U.S. this year.
I think so, yeah.
So it was the following week. The following week is really when everything got shut down.
Yeah.
So Public Storage Marathon, an Atlanta Track Club race.
Right.
Just Paula and Rich and those guys down there just do a phenomenal job putting on races.
Absolutely.
What was your, I mean, did you have big plans for the year? Or did you have your, was your race calendar pretty full up? Or
I think, you know, starting off in late 19, you put together your kind of race calendar, what you think you might do. And I even had kind of a 2-year plan of like, all right, I'm not going to, maybe I won't be able to run, because kind of backing up, I've been really focused on the mile the last couple of years. So I had done 5Ks, 10Ks, marathon stuff beforehand. And then I just got kind of tired of training for a marathon, bonking, and then all my eggs are gone. And it's just like, oh my God, now I have to rest for 6 weeks or whatever. And that just got really discouraging. So I was like, I'm going to focus on the mile. There's other things that went into that, but that was kind of the gist of it. So I was focused on the mile, but I was like, you know what? Maybe I want to do something different for 2020 and maybe even 2021. That side being 2021 was the 125th Boston. And I was like, I missed the 100th year. I want to go to the 125th. And so that was kind of my 2-year plan.
Yeah.
And I ran the Ventura Marathon in about this time last year.
Okay.
And I was running it with the running club that I run with, and Revolution Running. I don't know if I can give a shout out to them or not.
Of course, always, yes.
So I'm coaching with Revolution Running, and one of my runners and I were running together, and we wanted to qualify for Boston. And so we had kind of our pacing that was going on, and we were actually right on pace, which was awesome.
What was the goal?
The goal was, so since we're 50, the goal was 3:25, I think. They just changed their qualifying window. I think it was 3:30 and it went to 3:25. So I'm like, all right, I just need to run 3:25 or better. And knowing how the lottery works and it's gonna be the 125th anniversary, I'm like, I probably need 5 minutes.
A little bit of padding.
Little padding there. So I was kind of aiming for 3:20, 3:15, 3:20. He said the same thing. All right, I'm in for 3:20. I got to kind of tell some of the backstory. So sorry if this goes a little wonky. So I was mostly training for the mile that summer, right? That was my focus. And so, but I knew I needed to get this Boston qualifier in Ventura in October or November, whenever it was. I think it's late October. And so I was like, well, shoot, I got to do some long training.
Yeah.
So I got in a 14 miler. And then I was like, well, I still want to stay focused on the mile because I had the mile the day before. At that same race,
yeah.
So it was a 2-day race. So I ran the mile the day before, and then I went and ran the marathon the next day.
Okay.
I didn't have any training underneath me. I had basic training, but you know, not enough to normally do it. So
do you remember your mile time?
I ran 4:30 that day.
Okay.
Yeah. 4:29 on the clock, 4:30 on the timing pad.
Cheaters.
I know, it was a bummer. I went back to the Galloway method. I had met Jeff Galloway many years ago, and when I was first started picking up marathoning, and I was trying to break 3 hours for the marathon, and even back then he's like, you should walk for 30 seconds every mile, and that will give your legs enough recovery through the run that you'll be able to meet your goal, even at 3 hours. I'm like, you're kidding me, right? Like all your runners are 4 hours, 5 hour runners, like that makes sense for them. Like I'm a runner, like I don't stop to walk.
Yeah.
He's like, no, just try it. So I went to LA that year, did it, and I ran, I think I ran sub three for the first time
and so I did that. How brisk is the walk?
It's not brisk. It's
so you're just recovering.
Just recovering. Yeah, exactly. And there's a little bit of panic time in that.
Yeah.
You got to really be confident that you can kind of come back up. You know, because people are passing you, especially in the middle. Like you start walking, like every mile I was like, all right, I'm walking. And then people are like, come on, you got this.
From the first mile.
Yeah, it's hard to do.
Okay.
So I think I usually give myself at least 2 miles before I start doing it. Because I'm like, I can't do the first mile.
Okay.
The second mile I start. And so at the mile marker, I would just hit and then walk for 30 seconds.
Okay.
You only lose maybe 15 seconds kind of in your pacing because you're moving still.
Right.
And then you go again. And so what was great about Ventura is that they had a pace group. And my friend went with that pace group, the next one up to 3:20, where we were with 3:25. And so basically I would walk and lose touch with them. And then I'd spend the next mile catching right back up. Huh. So, and then I would just use them as this nice gauge, and it's kind of this nice yo-yo effect.
Oh, that's perfect.
And it, I mean, it works out great because it gives yourself some grace.
Yeah.
I mean, I use the restroom on one of my walk breaks, and I tied my shoe on one of the walk breaks because I was starting to feel a hot spot, so I kind of retied. And I didn't feel bad about stopping because I was like, all right, I know I've got some grace. We got through 22, 23. And my buddy's like, I'm just not feeling it. I'm like,
and he was not walking?
He was not walking. He kept getting mad that I kept coming back up into the group, you know? He's like, oh my God.
He's like, maybe here comes Todd again. Huh.
So he's starting to fade a little bit. And I'm like, I know, but this is the tough part of the marathon. Like, you gotta hunker down right now. You can get through this. And we'd make it another mile, and then all of a sudden he kind of looks at me with, I think, like maybe 2 miles to go. And he looks at me, he's like, I don't think I can do this anymore. And he started kind of wobbling a little bit. And I'm like, all right, we're walking. And we got to mile, I think we were less than a mile away. And there was an aid station. I said, we can't stop here. We got to go there. This is a really long story. Sorry.
No, it's good. That's why people tune in.
And I'm like, we got to at least get to this aid station where we can get water. Because he's overheating, basically. It wasn't really that hot, but he was having a hard time dealing with it. Being somewhat of a newbie marathoner as well. And so we got to the aid station. He just lays out. I was like, oh, my God. And, you know, we get him ice. We get him water. You know, we just making sure he's okay. He's like, I think I'm going to be okay. My blood pressure is really up. I know that it is. This happened to me before. It happened to him in Boston that April. And he's like, I know what I need to do. I just need to rest. I'm like, all right, well, we're here. There's nobody for aid there, really. It's just all
within about a mile of the finish at this point.
Yeah, three quarters. Like, we're so close. So I stand by kind of waiting for him and, you know, cheer a bunch of our runners going by and whatever else. And I just hang out with them until the medics finally come. And the medics have him on stuff for probably, I don't know, 40 minutes. And they're like, you need to go to the hospital. And he's like, no, I'm gonna be good. And they're like, no, seriously, like, you need to go to the hospital.
We're telling you.
Yeah, we're telling you.
Yeah.
Like, because he'd stand up and you would still be a little bit,
This isn't a liability call. This is just a, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, his blood pressure was way down. 40 minutes later, hour kind of total, he's like, I think I can walk in now. So we started a long, slow walk to the finish line and finish up. And we were about an hour 10 off of our pace by the time we finished.
You're a good training partner.
It was worth it. I mean, you know, there was a bunch of people who were like, why don't you just leave them and come back for them? I'm like,
there's other races.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why I did Atlanta.
That's interesting. Wow. So that puts you then in Atlanta.
Yeah. So
Publix.
I just knew I needed to get a qualifying time.
Yeah.
And also knowing that I wanted to run the mile in the summertime, I didn't want to have all of that marathoning kind of on my legs.
Right.
So yeah, Publix was a great opportunity. It was in February. It was the day after the Olympic trials. And I had gone out to LA 4 years before to shoot some photos for the Boulder Running Journal. And I wanted to do the same thing. I mean, to be a part of the Olympic trials in any capacity, just to watch it or to know people that are running it, it's phenomenal.
It was a great race.
Super emotional and lots of people to cheer for, and you come away with, you know, hoarse voice and everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
After it all. So yeah, Publix happened. I was a little bit more trained up. I had a few more long runs on, you know, more than 14 miles.
Yeah.
And
well,
actually,
to have a 25 and a half mile run a few months before that. You know,
right.
So.
Right. And I, you know, I actually didn't, I think I walked a couple times in it, but I don't think that was as much of my strategy.
Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of keep on a little bit of a pace, and it felt like a good race, and
you know,
got it done. And
it occurs to me, maybe I should use that technique in my mile.
Right. Yes.
I'll just walk every quarter mile.
Walk every quarter mile for 30 seconds.
For 30 seconds. That's a good way to break four. I think it might work for me.
Yeah.
Never know. Never know. All right. So you're, as we said, 53 years old. You're still busting out 4:30.
Somethings.
God dang it. It pisses me off. I got to be honest. It just pisses me off. But no, 4:30 miles. How do you do it? I mean, what's the, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, because I think you said before, like, you weren't, were you a high school runner?
I was not a high school runner.
You were not a high school runner. No. You were not a collegiate runner.
No.
You were not a, you know, this kind of came to you later.
Yeah, I mean,
in
college.
Is that part of it? Like, were you running later on fresh legs?
Maybe. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah. I think that helped with some of my distance experience.
Yeah.
You know, when I was 45, 46, 47, I definitely hit a plateau of, like, where I came up to a new level plateau type mm-hmm. thing. Like, I was here and then had a great coach and some great training, and then, boom, all of a sudden it was like, oh.
Yeah.
I mean, I was looking back at the Athlinks stuff, you know, because I don't remember my times. I'm terrible about that. Right. I'm like, oh, I remember running that race, but I don't remember what I did. So I was looking through my results. I was like, whoosh, I ran that?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I guess I was in good shape then.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, you get injured, right? I mean, everybody kind of gets injured, and you're managing that. It felt like every other year was that kind of race, where it was like, all right, I had a good year, and then the next year sucks because you get injured or whatever. And so as I got closer to 50, I had run a mile in Santa Barbara, and I ran a decent time, and that was off of kind of 10K training.
Yeah.
And I was like, huh, that felt really good. And that year I had heard about this guy, Brad Barton. I always drop his name because he's really the one that kind of got me interested in this. He was 49, I think, maybe 48, and he ran like 4:17, like ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I was like, and I had run 4:27 at this downhill mile on the road, and I'm like, well, I'm only 10 seconds away.
Right.
Like, how hard is that? How hard could that be?
It's 10 seconds.
Super naive.
Yeah.
And I was like, and that was just off of 10K training. So he inspired me to be like, let's just focus on the mile.
Yeah.
And not worry about those marathons and putting all that just kind of heavy training on your legs. And so for a couple of years, I basically just kind of wrote my own training programs and just was like, all right, what are some of the greats doing for mile training? And I would ask people that went to CU or folks that I knew were milers that were older at this point and just be like, all right, what are good workouts? What are your favorite workouts? And I actually kind of had an idea for a book that I still may do, but it was like putting these workouts together with photos of just kind of mile markers and streets and all sort of tracks and all that kind of stuff that I had run on that year. And knowing that I was going to kind of get to a place as a master that I was running the mile.
Yeah.
And actually had a pretty good success, like even in at 49. And then I was like, all right, next year is 50. That's the mark.
So what were the workouts looking like? Were you doing a ton of speed work? So two things, what were the workouts? And then also, were you looking at this as like a crawl, walk, run strategy of like, I'm going to do the mile to get better later at the marathon, or were you just kind of like, I was
100% mile.
You just like the wind going through your hair and you just wanted to burn it.
Yeah, I mean, like when you're, I mean, again, I didn't run in high school. I didn't run in college. And so knowing that feeling of the mile, like I had run a couple of miles. There's the Pearl Street Mile in Boulder, which is famous. And that was one of the ones that I had run. I hadn't run that many mile races, maybe a couple on the track, but the fact that you're going that fast with that many people in the Pearl Street Mile, it's insane. Yeah. Like, it's crazy energy. And I'm like, that is so fun. And that's what I wanted to do. And so I was like, nothing else matters.
Yeah.
I want to train for the mile. And again, I was like naive, like, well, 10 seconds, I could shave 10 seconds off just by being specific. So I was much more specific about mile training versus 10K, 5K type of training.
Okay.
What I learned from that is you can approach the mile from two different aspects specifically. So you can approach it from a speed standpoint. If I'm an 800 meter runner, I can come up to the mile relatively easy and have a lot of speed and a huge kick. Or you can train like a strength runner, like a 5K, 10K runner, and come down pretty easy and just be able to maintain a pace. You might not have a kick, but you can maintain a pace. So to throw out some names, one of the guys that I talked to during that time was Alan Culpepper.
Yeah.
Alan ran for CU. He was, I don't remember his time. I apologize, Alan, and the fans of the sport. But
we'll look it up on Athletics. We'll overlay.
He ran we'll at the Olympic Trials Marathon. He ran the fastest first-time marathoner time, right? Okay. He tied Alberto Salazar for, it was 2:09 something or whatever else the time was. He's one of the only people that have run a sub 2:10 marathon.
Yep.
and a sub-4 mile.
Wow.
So he was, him and Alan Gotcher out of CU had both run sub-4 miles.
Wow.
So I said, all right, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Might know a thing or two.
Yeah, I chatted with him about a couple things. At the end of a season, he kind of helped put together a plan for me as well. But yeah, I mean, you know, some of it's very specific. Like, I didn't have a kick in the traditional sense. Like, yeah. I just didn't have that leg speed. And so, you know, guys that I might have been racing against may have had a 27, 26 second 200 meter finishing kick, or even a 28 second finishing kick. I couldn't break 30.
Yeah.
You know, so I had to run like Alan did, which was more of a strength perspective, from a 5K strength perspective, which is put on the gas and just keep going and just keep rolling and try to run everybody out of their league a little bit in the beginning, and then they don't have to, they can't outkick you. And so that's that. And at altitude, you kind of have to do that too. And so
you looked at kind of what your abilities or skill was and determined it was more from the strength rate running down rather than the...
Right. And so, I mean, you definitely work on leg speed.
Sure.
But you definitely don't go from a 30-second 200 to a 26 super fast. I mean, you got to work on a lot of stuff during that time.
So when you're training to run a mile, like, what's your long run day? What's your...
So, I mean, different coaches have different... I've worked with a couple different people since then, and they all have slightly different attitudes towards it, again, whether or not you're coming from strength or speed. When I turned 49 and I knew I was going to be, you know, knew I was going to be 50.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
It happens.
It happens.
It
it's
happens.
Coming up.
Numbers work.
Yeah. Yeah. That was one time I was able to see the future.
Real Nostradamus there.
Yeah. So I was like, all right, I need to do something about my leg speed.
Yeah.
Because I was in a race where I got outkicked, and I was like, that can't happen again. So I worked with a local coach, and it was all about much more dynamic drills. And these are kind of basics. I'm not trying to diminish the training, but it's just stuff that you don't pay attention to.
Yeah.
So he put me on a program of doing a winter maintenance program, and, you know, we're doing kettlebell throws, and we're doing stretches, and we're doing lunges and squats, and you know, much more dynamic movements in that regard.
Yeah.
That's building the foundation for sprinting. Much more of a sprinting kind of background type thing. And then as we kind of got into the season, we definitely spent a lot more time on shorter stuff. So 100s and 50s and 150s and stuff like that, where you're really getting your leg speed up and you're really getting your speed down. And by the end of that, I ended up running a 25 something, 200 meter in the middle of the summer, which was phenomenal.
If you had to pick one or the other, the winter strength program in those very specific drills versus not doing that and just doing like the sprinting side of it, which do you think was more helpful?
You got to do both. Just need both. You have to do both. I mean, if you're going to do the sprinting stuff, you're going to get injured.
Yeah. So there it is. I mean, that's the recipe. So I do those things and I'm going to run a 4:30.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
That was it.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Make sure you take care of yourself, otherwise.
My mile PR was 5:55. It was right before we moved up here, and I was thrilled to do it. And I felt like I was actually pretty fit. And I don't know what happened. Like, my kids just went through cross-country season. I was doing a bunch of their workouts and things, and I feel like I can get fit, but I'm just not getting that fast like I did. So
yeah, well, you got it. That's the specifics.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that's when you start doing the 200s and the 400s and
working with a coach.
Feeling the pace. That's what you gotta do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, Todd, it's been great. It's been great catching up with you again.
Super fun.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
Cool. You know, athletes, we're all about more people racing more often, having more fun in the process. We hope you learned some things, or at least just had a nice, relaxing COVID time listening to a couple people talking about running and racing. And we'd love to talk more about racing. So any parting words of wisdom from the Boulder Runner?
I mean, you know, try to stay sane in these moments.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard not getting to do the things that we want to do.
Yeah.
And it's hard finding motivation during these times just to kind of get out. And so find the things that motivate you, you know, or take some time off if you need to. It never hurts to take a little bit of downtime, do a new sport. You know, we're coming up on winter, so go and do something that you don't normally do, and then have a fire in your belly when you come back next year.
Amen, brother. And listen, if you want these races that you know and love to come back, the best way to do that is to reach out, let them know you're still there for them, ping them on their socials, shoot them an email, give them a call, just say, hey, look, we're here when you're here, we're ready to come back. Follow Todd on your @BoulderRunner on Twitter and on Instagram, etc. So definitely give him a follow. Again, more people racing more often, having more fun in the process. So I'm Troy Bousseau. That's Todd Straka. Thanks for joining us. Happy racing, and until next time. See ya. And that is the show. Apologies for some background noise there. We were experimenting with some different formats, with some open air and video, which we will be posting shortly. So hope you enjoyed it. More people racing more often, having more fun in the process is our mission. Special thanks again to Todd Straka, the Boulder Runner. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast. We want to hear from you, so leave comments on our socials. We are at Athlinks across the board, or shoot us an email at podcast@athlinks.com. Share it with friends far and wide. Give us a review if you dig it. And until next time, happy racing, everybody.